Hello and welcome to Talking Europe, a government ready to act in the service of the French people. That's how the French Prime Minister, Michel Barnier, has described his new cabinet. This follows nearly 3 months of political deadlock when parliamentary elections left France with a hung parliament. A left-wing alliance won the most seats in the National Assembly, but its proposed candidate for Prime Minister was rejected, and the left is accusing French President Emmanuel Macron of a power grab, something that some other political voices have echoed as well. Well, it's also been a busy few days in Strasbourg and in Brussels, with the lineup of the new European Commission being announced, although those picks still have to be approved by the European Parliament. To take a broad look at the European agenda, I'm very pleased to welcome Arantxa González-Laya, the Dean of the Paris School of International Affairs at the elite French university Sciences Po here in Paris, and she's also a former foreign minister of Spain. Welcome back to you.
Pleasure.
So a quick question first on this new French cabinet. A lot of people have been saying the centrist bloc, which got around 27% of the vote in that election, is actually staying in power through this new government. Is that a problem of democratic legitimacy?
I mean, I think a big part of the legitimacy will depend on the efficiency, on what this government does, what policies it can implement, and whether or not it can tackle its first priority, which is today managing its finances. I think a big part of legitimacy will depend on efficiency.
So this 5.6% public debt, which is projected for France, we've spoken to economists who've said that tax increases might be needed. That would obviously hit the pockets of people who are suffering already. What do you think is the right way forward on this?
Well, I think the right way forward is to do something about this and to realign France's deficit with the European rules. And let's remember that it was France that pushed at the time to have limits on deficit. And it did this for two good reasons. First, because you need to manage the stock of debt that you're passing on to future generations, how much you are handicapping future generations from progressing economically. But also in Europe, in a common economic space with a common currency, we need everyone to behave on the budget side, on the deficit side, on the fiscal side. And if France doesn't do it, it's not only, it is not just an issue for France domestically, it will limit the ability of France to be very offensive in the budget discussions that will open in 2025 for the future European budget.
Do you think France has been in some way punished for its public finances and perhaps even the political deadlock? Because when you look at the responsibilities of the French EU commissioner, Stéphane Séjourné, he doesn't actually have all the portfolios that his predecessor had, Thierry Breton. And a lot of commentators here in this country are saying that France has been downgraded in the European Commission. Do you think that's true?
Well, I think it's a national sport to consider themselves belittled. I would just simply say that Stéphane Séjourné's portfolio is the central priority of this European Commission, which is the economy, economic recovery of Europe. And for that, he's got two big chunks, macroeconomics and also microeconomics, the entire industrial portfolio. Obviously, he will have to work hand in hand with the Spanish commissioner, with Teresa Rivera, who has as a mandate to better align the economy with our decarbonization objectives in Europe and with social justice. The two will have to work hand in hand. But the two have the very important task of reigniting the European economic engine, because there is no geopolitics in Europe if we are not strong economically.
You mentioned Teresa Ribera, who has been nominated for clean, just and competitive transition. If I can bring this back to France very briefly, because she, as energy minister in Spain, was very critical of France, saying that France had been blocking interconnectors so that Spanish and Portuguese energy could not get out to the rest of the continent. Is it going to be problematic now, especially for France, that she's in this top job?
you know, when you're nominated a commissioner, you have to appear before the European Parliament. You have to convince the European Parliament that you are no longer defending your national interests, that you are now defending the European interests. Mm. And thus is valid for her, is valid for all other commissioners. We've heard that some of them will be questioned probably tougher than others. Mm. And the answer is in the assurances that this appointed commissioners will give to the European Parliament that they have understood they've now changed their T-shirt. And the T-shirt they now have is one with a big European flag, and the interests and the values they will defend are the European interests and values.
But within that European flag, do you think the social agenda has kind of been pushed back in a way in this European Commission, because there's no specific commissioner for the Green Deal, there's no specific one for equality, and on social rights and jobs, I just want to quote you something that Nicola Schmidt, the outgoing commissioner, tweeted. He's from your political family, by the way, originally. He said, "Social and labour rights cannot be limited to skills and preparedness, whatever this word means." So there seems to be some concern about how Ursula von der Leyen has mixed and matched these apparently different different portfolios.
Well, let's be very clear about this, beyond terminology. If social justice is not at the heart of the European project, the European project will not have legitimacy. What we have seen in the last 5 years is that we need a better dosage between competitiveness, decarbonation, and social justice. And without this social justice piece, we will have trouble advancing competitiveness and decarbonation. So let's call it whichever way we want to call it. Let's maybe abandon a bit the terminology that is being used to appoint the commissioners, and let's look at what policies will need to be implemented. But without that, there will not be European citizens' support for Europe.
Anshika Gonzalez-Leyer, I wanted to get your thoughts as well on the whole migrant issue, which is obviously very prominent in the news these days. Germany has reintroduced border controls. The Netherlands has asked for an opt-out from European asylum rules. Are we seeing an unravelling of this migration and asylum pact, which was approved after so many painstaking negotiations?
I think what we are seeing is a big divorce between facts and perception. Facts in Europe today is that we are 35% minus in entry of irregular migrants into the European Union. But perceptions, when you ask the European citizens, they perceive migration to be one of their biggest threats they face. This divorce is fueled by populism in Europe, and in particular right-wing populists that have made this their big battleground. So if we want to manage migration, and we have to do this because Europe has an incredible demographic deficit. Just in Germany, 1.5 million needed just to keep the stock of citizens, just to keep the number of citizens. If we are to respond to this, then we've got to reconcile facts with perception.
Right, but if it's just a problem of perception, how come the EU is allocating this 14 million euros to help the Canary Islands now with migrant arrivals?
No, again, I'm not saying there is no problem. We have to tackle the problem of irregular migrants. We also have to be very clear that whomever is rejected asylum has to leave the European space. But we also have to make sure that migration will be one of the key factors of our competitiveness. And if we do not integrate this also in our discussions, we are going to have big legitimacy trouble again in Europe. So yes, let's be firm on irregular migration. Yes, let's give ourselves the means to control better our borders. Let's make sure that when someone should not be regularly in the European territory, leaves the European territory. But let's make sure we also talk about migration for what it is, an enormous necessity in Europe.
I mentioned that you were foreign minister of Spain, and of course you know all the Middle East files very well. What voice do you think Europe should have in this potentially new phase of the conflict between Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon?
Well, for Europe to have a weight in the Middle East, it has to be united. And that's the prerequisite. And for as long as Europe is not united, it will not have an impact in the Middle East or elsewhere, for that matter. And we need a united European voice in the Middle East, because the risks for Europe, not just the risks for the countries involved in the conflict and the neighbours, but also the risks for Europe are simply too high.
Do you think that, though, that European credibility has been sort of undermined because of so many months of, let's say, differences or divisions on countries that support Israel more and those that lean towards recognising a state of Palestine?
No, I think the Europeans are united in the necessity to solve the conflict, in the necessity for a two-state solution, in the necessity for a ceasefire now. But they say this with different undertones and with different, sometimes, messaging. And this undermines the ability of the EU to have a say. And we need to have a say. We need to support others that are having exactly the same objective, like the US, who is working to have a ceasefire in the region, or the countries in the region, the neighbors who see the escalation as particularly dangerous. So hopefully the new high representative can maybe try to put a more united European voice.
We'll have to see, of course. Yes, she, like others, has to be confirmed by the European Parliament. We'll leave it there and say goodbye for now to Arantxa González-Laya, Dean of the Paris School of International Affairs here at Sciences Po. Thank you so much for being my guest. And in part two of this programme, we'll be taking stock of the Hungarian presidency of the European Union. So do stay with us.